what's happening.
Right.
Rather than going with that flow that says, oh yeah, well, this came up and we're just going to have to do that right now.
Right.
You know, we spend so much time in that mindless place of resisting and arguing why all of these things are in the way. And I got to go away. Wasting time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Cool. Well, let's dig in. I'm going to do my introduction and then we'll just have a conversation.
Sounds good.
So, hello, this is Josh Jackson. Josh Jackson, if I can say my name right. Hello, this is Josh Jackson, and welcome to Unlearnings. Lisa, Gaida, and I look at intentional ways of scaling your important work. We would love to connect with you at unlearnings.co. One of the ways that we help is through this medium, where we hope those listening are able to think deeper about what they're doing and learn from professionals that we have joined on a new assertion that will help drive audiences' work culture or give them something practical to take back. And today we have Jeanette Brané here with us. You can find a great deal of information, a lot of stuff on her website, which I'll post in the description. And I really just want to dig deep into Jeanette's work. And so to bring a little context, we met through Seth Godin's All-NBA, and a past guest wanted to hear from her and her relationship with work and bring some practical steps or process to their work. So for those that don't know you, Jeanette, and about your work, can you give them one story that really just gets them to where you're at today?
Oh, yes, I can. When I was in my late 30s, I was crazy busy as a fashion executive. And all of a sudden, both my parents got cancer at the same time. And they also ended up dying just about a year apart. And after that, the doctors told me that it was only a matter of when I was going to get cancer too. And so I got, you know, obviously that stops you in your track. Not only that you lose your parents, that stops you in your track already, but I really had to rethink how I was taking care of myself. And I realized at the time that I couldn't have the career I was having and taking care of myself at the same time. And so I set out to figure out, how do I take care of me? And I realized as I was changing my career, starting to help people learn how to take better care of themselves, that we actually need to bring self-care with us to work. Because it's not fair that we choose between a career or being healthy. Like, we need both. Actually, we need to be healthy to have a great career. And so that's what my work is about now.
Okay, so I'm fascinated by this, and I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole. But when someone mentions, and I think there are a ton of studies on this, when someone says the C word, cancer, it stopped you kind of in your tracks. And just in that moment, were you listening to the person that told you there's a matter of time when you're going to have cancer? Did you continue to listen to them, or were you more kind of taken back of like internally reflecting? Do you remember?
Yeah, I do. I got really angry because I already knew I was high risk because it was running in my family. So when my mother died of cancer, it was already her third breast cancer. So I knew my grandmother had two breast cancers. And so it wasn't news to me that I was high risk. But what pissed me off, excuse my French, sure. Is it a bleep word? No, it's not a bleep word, is it? What pissed me off, what got me really angry, was that I was told that I had no options.
Right.
And I was like, you have no options. What you can do is start preventive treatment now, which included getting like a preventive chemo and surgery. So I was like, wait a minute. So you're asking me to start preventive cancer therapy almost as if I already have cancer.
Right.
So you're like And you're telling me that how I take care of myself doesn't matter. And so I really wanted to, so yes, I stopped listening and I started looking for where I could help and change and do something differently that wouldn't sort of just make me a victim of the cancer. I wanted to take my power back.
Right. That's, you know? It's crazy to think about the fact that now you have to come up with a new solution.
Yeah.
And so let's go down that route in terms of self-care, and you're upset and you're angry and you're trying to figure out a solution. And I'm sure there are a ton of people that are trying to deal with this today in terms of self-care and why it matters so much. What do we need to change in terms of our work, or do we start with our personal life?
Well, I like to integrate it, right? Because I don't think that we can say it's either work or our personal life, because right now, the way we work, we have to integrate life and work, right? We take work home with us, so we should take life with us to work as well, right? Like, it'd be normal to think of that as an integration rather than, and I know we talked a lot about work-life balance over the past years, right? In the sense of, well, we need to have time out so that we can have more balance in our lives. And I agree with that, but I don't think it stops there. I think it starts with, or continues with, looking at how we take better care of ourselves while we're working, so that we don't get into this burnout situation and we don't end up with either a diagnosis, and it doesn't have to be cancer, it could be a heart attack. You know, that's even more like a shock coming in from nowhere when people are like, whoa, wait a minute, I just had a heart attack and I was 50 something years old. Like, I hear that a lot too, right? Or even younger. Like, there are people in their 40s now that have heart attacks because they're so stressed at work. And so I think in all ways, we need to learn how to take better care of ourselves every day as part of a way we work. It's like a work style. Self-care needs to be part of our work style. And this idea that we need to start somewhere about how do we take better care of ourselves, I think we get a little stuck in thinking that there's some perfect way we have to do it, or there's some specific cure that we haven't discovered yet, or some specific food that's going to change everything. Things are a little bit more integrated and complex than that. But the big issue, or the big first step, is to bring stress down in our bodies. And when I say stress, I mean survival stress. I don't mean performance stress or deadline stress. I mean survival stress. When we get to a point where we work all day with no water, no food, no sleep, we automatically kick our bodies into survival mode. And I think if we look at it that way, we can start managing stress.
Right.
Right. Because normally we look at stress as something that comes from the outside, from our environment, or from our workload, or from other people that are putting pressure on us. But I'm talking about the core basic survival stress that makes us not able to handle the things that come at us every day, which then builds up to immense amount of stress. So if we actually peel it down, it becomes really basic and really simple. It becomes a new relationship with how important it is that our very own body gets the simple, most basic three things that we need every day, which is water, food, and sleep.
Yeah. So let's talk about this. Let's talk about sleep.
Yeah.
Because I think, I mean, recently let's just use me myself as an example of, I need to accomplish all these things today. Like, I put that sort of pressure on myself, and I go, okay, I'm going to get 8 hours of sleep, right? Like, that's what I'm thinking. And at 4 a.m, I wake up and I'm like, oh no, I have to get this done, and jump out of bed and get to work. Right. Good, bad. What do you think?
I think it depends on your mindset. Are you having fun, or are you scared that you're not going to get it done? Are you excited to do it because you're like, whoa, I really want to get this done because I'm excited about what's going to come out of it. Or I'm looking forward to being part of this project and I really want to get this done so I get a head start. That's a positive mindset that's excited about something. That's not negative stress, right? That's not survival stress. Survival stress is, oh gosh, I don't know if I'm going to survive this. I don't know if I'm going to get this done. I am up some whatever creek and I'm not sure if I have a paddle.
Right.
Right. And where's that freaking boat that's going to save me?
Right. Right.
And so if we are in that mindset that we're in trouble and we don't know if we're going to get through the day, we're on survival stress mode. And that's a mindset as well. So what I teach is that I teach something called think, act, think, engage, act. So think is how our mindset is triggering different things. Engage is the sense of options we have for fuel, one of them being sleep, one of them being food, one of them being water, or sometimes it's a walk, or it's taking a pause and meditate for 5 minutes. And the other is, what kind of habits are we instilling so that we support ourselves? And so when you're asking that question, they'll say, well, you know, it could be that something in your unconscious had an idea, because our unconscious mind works best when we're asleep, right? And sometimes we wake up with great ideas. I don't think that's stress. I think that's excitement. But what are the messages you're telling yourself becomes the mindset with which you're approaching the assignments or the work or the problem that you have to solve.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think one of the things that causes us most stress or most waste of time is our resistance to what's going on. That we're trying to argue with ourselves that something just happened. Like, a lot of times people tell me that they wake up at 4 a.m. and can't go back to sleep. And I ask them, well, what is your relationship with waking up at 4 a.m. and not being able to go back to sleep? And they're like, well, it gets me upset and it gets me this and it gets me that. And I'm like, okay, I get that. I wake up in the middle of the night too. And I used to not be able to get to sleep again. And now I'm like, yay, I got X amount of hours still left. And all I need is to go get some water and, you know, move around for 5 minutes and I'm ready to get back to bed. So I'm telling myself that, and I'm telling my unconscious mind that we're going back to bed.
Right.
You know, so it's, we negate and misunderstand how powerful our mindset is. And the messages we tell ourselves is like hypnosis. I'm a hypnotherapist as well, so I happen to know what words mean, right?
So that brings me to 2 points. So before we, when you're talking to the physician or the individual that said, hey, you have cancer and you shut down. And as we continue to talk, it's not just that situation or that story where words matter, right? And how you're talking and what you're saying, even externally, but internally, when you wake up, is it, I have to get up or I get to get up? You know, like just small phrases of saying, as you were saying, negative stress, positive stress. I think that this all translates to go, I get to get up today and I get to be on this journey.
Yep.
And others might say it's negative, but maybe we switch that narrative. We switch how we talk about things.
Yeah. And that is, you know, we as human beings are not actually driven by fear in a motivational kind of way. We think so. We think that when we're scared of something, we're going to get our butt off the couch and get going. We're going to get our butt off the couch, yes, potentially, or we're going to freeze. One of the two. It's fight or flight or it's freeze, right? So some people get completely paralyzed by fear and they're not going anywhere. And it turns into depression because they feel that they can't overcome this challenge. For other people, they start moving and start going at it, but in a disparate, not a very sort of conscious, mindful, reflective way, because they're driven by fight and flight, which often happens when we go to work every day, is that we're driven by fight and flight. So we just do exactly what we know how to do. We're driven by this stress mode of overcoming the fear, and we're just driven by instinct instead. But when we can shift the fear into, so what does my fear tell me that I want? Now we're shifting the fear into desire. Now we have real motivation because now we're driven by passion. So I actually wake up every morning and have to deal with fear. I don't know where it comes from. Sometimes it's worse than other times, but I actually have a fear thing, for lack of a better word. I have a fear DNA or whatever it is. So I actually have to be really careful. Like, I can't tolerate a lot of caffeine. I go right into stress mode. So I actually have to really work with that. And so fear in the morning for me, I have to turn that into curiosity. Because if not, I can tell myself that I'm in trouble.
Right.
So I have to actually change the words and ask myself, wow, so, okay, so you're a little afraid of this today. What is something that I can do to move forward? Or what is something I can be curious about how to solve this problem? So that I really consciously turn my fear from information about what I need to pay attention to into a forward moving, okay, this is what I want to try to figure out. And that's where the words matter so much, right? Because if not, we're just going to keep repeating how scared we are. So if we can notice that we're scared and acknowledge that we're scared, accept the fact that we are and not have the resistance of, I wish I wasn't scared. It's like, well, you are, so stop it, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's something here that's telling you to be aware of something, because you have to remember that fear has been what helps us survive for all these years. So I don't think we should boo-boo it. I think we should use it as information. If you walk down the street in the dark and you didn't have an ounce of fear, there's a good chance somebody's going to pickpocket you if you're walking down the wrong street. But if you have a little bit of fear, you might be like, maybe I should walk down the street with lights on it. Right? And maybe I should make sure that my wallet isn't hanging on the outside of my handbag or whatever it is. Like, it's this idea that we're using fear as information to action.
So this is great, because with Lisa and I always talk about curiosity, not only here, but also with the work we do. When someone goes, I have this fearful moment, right? Is this idea going to work? Is this, is my boss going to, you know, take it and disregard it completely? Or this person has already said they're not on board. And we always look at it from, let's be a little curious. Why don't they like that? Or why are you afraid? And kind of drive the conversation or the action, as you would say, down this think, engage, act sort of mentality, which I, side note, I love the tea. It's almost like tea time, right? This think about it first, let's have tea, let's engage with it, and then let's act on it.
Oh my God, I love that. I didn't think of it like that.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't think of it as tea. Oh my God, that's fantastic.
Because it was like, just another note, if you think about going for a walk, it's this moment of, let's think first and then engage with that moment and then act on it. So talk a little bit more, let's dig a little bit deeper into this curiosity piece and playing with fear at work to combat that negative stress. Are you combating it, or is it like you're completely just flipping the narrative?
I think I'm transforming it. You know, I think I'm using it to drive forward so that it's almost like surfing, right? If we're scared of the waves, we're never going to surf. Right? The waves will overcome us. But if we're learning how to use the waves, they become how we move forward when we're surfing. And so I think it's this idea that we can have fear around something, or we can use that something to move us forward. So I used my fear of cancer to instead figure out how to take better care of myself. Rather than protecting myself from cancer, I'm learning how to live healthy. So that's my switch. So I'm using it to transform my habits from not being protective and defensive or preventive, so to speak, but rather saying, well, how do I want to live every day? So if I get cancer, at least I had a really good life. Right? So it's this idea that we're still mindful. And so if we're afraid of something, like if we go into work, and I have worked for some difficult people and big personalities and very great companies, but bosses that have not been easy to work for because there was temperament involved. And I'm not very good with temperament. I don't like to get yelled at, right? So I would live in fear and go to work in fear. But instead of being scared of being yelled at for doing the wrong thing, I would ask the questions of being curious. And it's actually something my dad taught me. He said, instead of wondering why you're not getting something done, wonder what you need so that you can get it done.
Right.
And I'm using the same principle, and that's part of the Think, Engage, Act too. It's like, okay, this is a situation, or I sometimes call it AAA, right? Acknowledge, accept, and then act. What is it that's happening, and how can I move forward because of it? Okay. Not in spite of it, but with this information, what do I need so that I can move forward? And in a simple way, we can ask ourselves that in terms of self-care. Like, I'm really tired today. What do I need so I can have a little bit more energy? Rather than just stimulating ourselves with sugar and coffee, it may be, you know what? I need to take half an hour this morning to just sit with my tea and quietly just have breakfast before I get on with my day. And I'm actually going to take that half hour to just get centered and get some food, instead of like running off that I thought I was going to do.
Right. Okay. So let's talk, let's go from this aspect of those that are not in a self-care mode, right? How is that affecting the performance and the culture of these businesses? And then we'll get into tools and tactics.
Sure. You know, I think what I have seen over the years, I've been working with people, coaching people for the past 15 years, and anything from employees and teams and team leaders and executives and company owners and stuff like that. So, and it's the same problem I see everywhere. And that is, if we don't take care of ourselves, we get tired, we get unfocused, we can't pay attention for as long as we would like to. We're exhausted at the end of the day. We go home and probably overeat because now we're starving. A lot of people end up with a drink or one too many even. Maybe even go to sleep too late because we really want to cramp in a little bit of like self-time. So that ends up watching TV till late. And so we end up in these habits where we're just crashing at night. And then we wake up the next morning even more exhausted. And so a lot of people work on the 5 day, how can I get through a 5 days on less and less and less and less energy? And by Wednesday, most people are falling apart. By Friday, they are like not even working. So why not take it off, right? And so it's this idea that how can we instead support ourselves so that we actually have optimal energy throughout the whole week? And though we don't have to recover over the weekend, we actually can have fun. We can go out and do something that would then inspire something else in us and take care of another part of us that could use those 2 days to have fun with, I don't know, family, friends, go somewhere. You know, this kind of idea that it's not actually, weekends are not meant for recovery. Weekends are meant for exploring and having exciting things to do. But we can't get there if we don't take care of ourselves all day. And a lot of times, too, people have much better performance in the morning unless like a lot of people are not morning people. Like if you read the book When, you will see that there is we have different times a day that we are at our best. But we can actually I don't want to use the word manipulate because it sounds negative in the sense of like, oh well, wait a minute. Because I want us to listen to how we feel instead of navigate how we what kind of energy we need. But it's also in a way we are affecting our energy, right? Because if you wake up sluggish, you need a different type of food so that you can get more energy to get going. You need a more dopamine-based food, like an egg or something like that. But if you're waking up super anxious and you're like can't really like think or put two and two together because things are just so nerve-wracking right now, you need to get settled down with some food that gives you more serotonin. So we can actually navigate how we feel and help us affect and change, therefore, not only our attention and our focus on how we feel, but also therefore our performance.
Okay. And that book, When, that's the Daniel Pink book?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah.
So when we're talking about these things and going through this, I know a lot of creatives, the great creatives and directors and who they work with, a lot of times take their team out of the work environment to say, today we're going to just go explore and we're going to go kind of look around and see if we can find inspiration, right? And if that translates to you can't do that during the week, but you're using the weekend less of a I'm going to watch TV or I'm going to just sit around, but more of a less of a rejuvenation. Well, maybe it is rejuvenation of exploring and being curious and rejuvenating with family and friends outside, that now you can take that back to your work. Is that how you're seeing certain things happen, or can you talk to the creatives and how they're using and managing their time and when to kind of be more creative and use that as not only inspiration but self-care? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, it is. And I think it's that recognition of, for example, I had a client yesterday and we realized that that moment 3 to 4, he sort of crashes a little bit and he gets impatient and he feels like his work is done, but he still needs to do more, no more work. And we decided that instead of going snacking in the kitchen, that could be his time to go for a walk. Because that would actually be a time where he could then disconnect from, okay, I just had all of these projects that I needed to finish, to, well, I want to be doing focus more on some projects where I can use my creativity in the afternoon. So he recognized that that was his natural pattern. And now instead we're using self-care to support the natural pattern so that he gets something out of that natural pattern rather than getting just reacting to it. And in a way, not taking advantage of that natural pattern because he's actually numbing himself out by going to the kitchen and snacking. So he's not getting anything out of his time in the afternoon.
Right. So, okay. So that's one action. That's one way that one individual is working on that. Yes. A habit that he had to kind of like switch and deal with and turned it into a self-care tool.
Yes.
Right.
But it also becomes a performance tool in a way, right? So it's, the self-care is the performance tool when you do it that way.
Yeah. So what are some other ones? What are some other ones that other people are using or that you suggest? Or how do you go through the process to find one for yourself?
Yep. I'm going to answer the other question you also had about teams. I'm going to just say one thing about that first. And that is that one of the things that happened when I was working with Esprit in Europe was that we had mandatory lunch where everybody had to go for lunch together every single day.
That's cool.
And it became a real bonding. The culture was amazing. We worked really well together and we worked probably much harder than anyone that I've ever seen, but in a very effective and efficient and productive way, because we had that break and we had that bonding time and we ate together. This idea of eating together is a lot more important than we are allowing it to be in our daily lives. We think of it as a, oh yeah, going out for a networking meeting, but how about just going out for a connecting meeting? Or as you were saying, a team that goes out and spends time together doing something completely different. At the time, the owner of Esprit was well known for having his board meetings on a mountain climbing trip. So it was this idea of working side by side on something different that made the team come together and come up with much better ideas. So that's one thing that I think is important, is that we give a little bit more more attention to the fact that these things are actually really productive.
Now,
if they're not time off.
Now, have you found that there needs to be a framing going into it of this is why we're doing it, rather than just, hey, we're going to go to a baseball game and have fun?
I don't think there needs to be a framing that we're doing it so we can have fun, or we're doing it so we can connect better, because that happens naturally if people are hanging out together and having a good time. But if you're putting them together and saying, well, you better have a good time because you're going to bond at this thing, it's a little bit more awkward. And you're like, okay, how am I going to bond? And so I think it's important that it just becomes part of the culture. That the part of the culture is that we have time where we are just spending time without working together. It's not necessarily so that we can come up with ideas. It's so that when we come back to work, the ideas will start to flow again.
Yeah, I think that's an important point.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's not like, oh my God, I went for a walk and I didn't come up with a new idea. Granted, a lot of times that is what happens. You know, that's why you get the best idea in the shower, right? And I think they're going to come up with a notepad that's a shower notepad at some point, because I do think that creative people need to have a shower notepad. But then for ourselves, I think one of the things that's really ideal is to create a daily rhythm or a structure that incorporates the water, the food, and the pauses that we need. So actually, studies show that our attention is best focused for 45 to 90 minutes at a time. I'm really good at, I have noticed that after 75 minutes, the last couple of minutes, I'm pushing a little harder. But I can go 90 minutes, but then I kind of like really need to cut out for 5 or 10 to shift and just reset my nervous system, right? Some people are like 45 minutes, they're starting to wear off. So if we actually start noticing, what is our attention span? And also, if we are using food as fuel before we need the fuel, not to refuel after, but so that we're fueling up before we're needing the energy. We're talking brain, we're talking physical energy, mental energy, emotional energy. If we're using food to set us up so that we're like, okay, this is what I need so I can get through the next 4 hours. This is what I need so I can get through the next 4 hours. And this is what I need so I can get through the next 4 hours. Then we're like, okay, now we've got that pattern going and we're actually creating habits that support us. And that those are basic self-care habits that support our performance. Right? Or there was a CEO that told me that he had, he was on his way into a meeting and he was like feeling off. He felt confused. He wasn't really on. He was like tired and he was actually kind of in a bad mood and he didn't really want to take the meeting and he had to. And there was all kinds of things going on before this meeting. And he took a sort of like just mindlessly took a big bottle of water and gulped it all down, not thinking he needed water. He didn't realize he needed water. And as he stopped, it finished and he was done drinking it and walks into his meeting, he realizes that his energy has completely shifted. He feels focused. He's full of energy. He's no longer tired. He's ready for the meeting. He's like excited. Like he's ready to go. He was just dehydrated.
Interesting.
Right. So it's this idea that these tools are so simple that we completely forget to implement them because we take our bodies for granted.
Right. So
you might think your computer is your best and most important tool every single day, but actually it's your body.
Well, it's funny because what people can't see is we're both in between talks drinking water, right? So I'm glad I'm on that schedule. And two, I think this is a tactic that we both of us have used in terms of 45 minutes, what can be done. And I think about everything in 45 minutes, right? Going from my place in Brooklyn to Grand Central, 45 minutes, Connecticut to Grand Central, 45 minutes. I've looked at, all right, in Chicago, where I'm at in Chicago, 45, it's going to take me 45 minutes. What can I get accomplished in that 45 minutes? Yeah. And then maybe I need to walk for a few minutes just to get my blood flowing and rejuvenate and have a glass of water and think differently about what I'm doing. So anything else that you can think of that in terms of tactics that other people have used beyond the 45 minutes, or briefly go through kind of a process to figure it out?
Yeah. I think one of the things is to look at the structure throughout the day and actually plan it in. If you don't plan it in, it's not going to happen. If you don't plan in your lunch, it's not going to happen. If you don't plan in, it's the same as going to the gym. If it's not on your schedule, it's not going to happen, right? You're not going to wake up motivated. You're not going to be like, oh, I'm looking so much forward to this. You're sort of setting your brain up to look forward to it if it's on your schedule, or at least you're actually, you're in your unconscious mind, you know you're doing it later, so you're already in the process of. It's a little bit like how sex therapists get you back into sex. It's by putting it on the schedule, right?
Well, you're
starting to gear yourself up to this is going to happen. So you're actually more motivated by the time it happens. So if you are sort of looking at it saying, well, I really need to start moving more. If you're planning in a little bit of movement, like, oh, I'm actually going to go out and pick up my lunch instead of having it delivered to the office. Okay, that's 10 minutes right there. Instead of looking at that 10 minutes and saying, oh, I really don't have time to run out and get it, be like, okay, I'm scheduling in that I have 10, 15 minutes where I'm walking out, picking up my lunch, coming back, sitting down, eating it, and then I'm ready. So that if you scheduled it in, there's a good chance you're like, ah, I'm looking forward to going for a walk and getting my lunch and coming back and eating it.
Right.
Right. But if we don't schedule it in that way, there's a good chance it won't happen. Right. And the other thing is to have really good self-care boundaries, because people will try to be like, oh, wait, there's 15 minutes right there. I can snatch those from you. And you're like, no, that's like a meeting with myself is just as important as a meeting with someone else. Right. Because, like, for example, a lot of times when I know I need my lunch, and if I don't get my lunch, I'm not going to be as good at what I'm doing in the afternoon. So I don't think of it as I need my lunch. I think of it as my clients need me to eat the lunch.
I like that. I like that a lot.
Like, my clients deserve that I have optimal attention in the afternoon. I cannot do that if I'm hungry, if my blood sugar is low, or if I didn't take enough of a rest between my meetings, I don't have the attention that the next meeting deserves.
And how, so I think this is important, that if you miss your, so you have it on the schedule, you start to go down this rabbit hole of not saying no and setting the boundary, and now you've missed your walk to go get your lunch, there is a tendency to kind of be stressed.
Yes.
Right? Like, I missed this. I'm off track. And now you kind of get flustered. How do you suggest combating or working with that, as you said, transform that stress into kind of a self-recovery of going, yeah, I missed it, let me get back on track. Right. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I don't call it get back on track. I call it get forward. Because I think when we're thinking of it as get back on track, it's not flexible. And it's just words right now. It's just words. It means something different to you than it means to me. But when you say get back on track, it feels like I messed up. When I'm saying, okay, how do I deal with this situation and figure out how to solve it? then I'm already past it and I'm already trying to figure out how to solve it. I'm already back in action. So I'm already trying to figure out how do I then do this so that it works anyway. Now I know for next time that I might have to schedule in a little bit earlier that I need a notice that now I need to finish my meeting so that I can go. So I'm using it as information to set myself up for success. It's like beating yourself up for not doing something is just a waste of time, like seriously. But use it as information for what you need next time. I think it's super important that we need to keep asking ourselves, how am I right now? What do I need so that I can do this either a little bit better or feel at my best or whatever it is? So we keep asking ourselves those questions. I think it's important to ask questions of ourselves, just like it is if we have a team. Like, what's not happening here? Why is this not working? What do we need so we can move it forward? If we get stuck in why is this not working, your unconscious mind is going to keep up with all the answers about why it's not working, and you get stuck in why it's not working. If we can go into the, like, for example, the AAA, what's not working? Okay, let's just accept the fact that it's not working. What do we need so we can make it work? Now we're moving forward and getting unstuck. And the unconscious mind will help you answer the question you ask it. So if you're curious in a positive way, I wonder what I need so I can get this done. Your unconscious mind is gonna come up with all the good ideas for you. But if you're answering, I wonder why I'm not able to do this, you are burying yourself in the hole of all the reasons why you're not getting it done. And you're wasting your time.
Well, I think that's good. I think this is good, Jeanette, and I appreciate you being here today on Unlearnings, and want to continue this conversation with you and everyone else. So thank you.
Thank you for having me. And remember, ask forward.
Exactly.